we'll go on to case number 3, Heide v. Pittenger, which is 09-1388. Okay. Morning, Ms. Schneider-Hines.
Hi, my name is Michelle Schneider-Hines. I represent Dr. Raymond Heide, the appellant in this matter and the plaintiff in the district court. May it please the court, counsel. Dr. Raymond Heide is challenging his treatment by various Tazewell County, Illinois officials in relation to the tax assessment of his residence. Yes, this is about an individual's property tax assessment, which is not an issue that comes before this court very often. But I want to underscore the magnitude of this dispute.
The Supreme Court has certainly discouraged us from having these cases come before us very frequently.
Yes.
What do you have to say to that?
I'm assuming that you may be referring to the Levin case that was just recently decided.
To the way this case was eventually decided.
Okay. The triggering event, I think, that led to this lawsuit, and I just want to address the facts very briefly. Dr. Heide's property tax assessment increased from approximately $150,000 to more than $400,000. That's assessed value, and fair market value to support that would have had been an increase from about $450,000 to $1.3 million in a year.
Forgive me, but I may be off the wall here, but it seems to me, well, all right, let me put it this way. Why did you try to bar the Board of Review from inspecting the property? Because if they'd been able to inspect the property, maybe you wouldn't be here. How else would you have proposed for them to have resolved the dispute regarding the property's square footage? And that's what it all boils down to. Let them in. Let them bring their little rulers, whatever they do. Figure it out.
Ironically, Your Honor, that eventually did happen.
I know, but...
I understand. There's a factual dispute as to whether Dr. Heide was giving access and to how that was supposed to happen and to why it took so long to happen. And part of the problem was who had to be there. The Board of Review was demanding that every member of the Tazewell County Board of Review be allowed to participate in an internal inspection of Dr. Heide's residence as well as the Tazewell County assessor.
So what? Come on in, have a cup of coffee, take out your rulers, and let's figure this out.
And that eventually happened. I mean, that eventually happened, Your
Honor.
But
the big assessments happened before that.
Right.
And that's, what is it called, a doomage assessment, when you will not allow the assessor to come into your property, so they assess it three times might be what it's worth, and you either pay the taxes or you let them come in.
Right. Well,
that's the way it works, at least in progressive Milwaukee county.
There is a property tax appeal rule that does encourage property tax or property owners to let people come in and measure their houses, and we did. Dr. Heide did eventually let someone come in, and I was actually present, and they measured every corner of every room. And there was an agreement that we came to as to the square footage of this residence. The assessment didn't change even after that. And I think it's a little bit deceptive to focus on that because there is this factual dispute as to why this inspection didn't happen. There was some correspondence exchanged, and there was some miscommunication, and some dates didn't line up. And so there's some factual issues that were never truly resolved in that regard.
You know, all this is very interesting, but go back to Judge Cudahy's first question. Why should the federal courts be involved in an issue like this? When you have more than adequate state remedies available to correct this injustice, if there in fact is one.
Well, that's the that's one of the reasons that I think the federal courts need to be involved here, is because I think the adequacy of the state remedies is not necessarily a foregone conclusion. The appeals process in Illinois for a property tax, especially after you get through the Board of Review at the property tax appeal level, there's a tremendous backlog. We, in the record, there's a letter from the property tax appeal board.
But it's only money. So if you're... If later on you find out that you were overassessed, that's the bottom line. You get money back, or that's all lawsuits involve time and that sort of thing. I don't see that that's much of a reason for bypassing the procedures.
Didn't you have an option after you got through the Board of Review to go to the court, state court?
Yes, we do, Your Honor, and we are in the process of attempting to do that. When we did file our state court administrative review proceeding, ironically, the defendants in this case removed that case to federal court. So we got thrown out of federal court, and we're here today because that case was dismissed, and we're also back in federal court arguing, you just threw us out, and now we're back here because now the defendants want you to take jurisdiction. So I think it's a little bit complicated. Back to the it's only money question. Yeah, it is only money, but it's a lot of money. And the problem is, to resolve this, we've had to file multiple property tax appeals. Currently, Dr. Heide has 4 property tax appeals pending for the Property Tax Appeal Board in Illinois. That's not the one that's described in our briefs now that went to hearing. 4 of them, the 07, 08, 09, and we just filed the 2010. None of those are scheduled for hearing. It takes sometimes 6 months just to get a docket number for these appeals, and then multiple years to have them heard. So I think there's really a question of fact that wasn't even addressed by the district court as to the adequacy of the state court remedies. We haven't even made it to the state court for administrative review on the case, the 2005 taxer case, and we're over 5 years out.
In thinking about the Roswell case, the Supreme Court primarily focused on whether the state administrative remedy contained adequate procedural safeguards. Is there any claim here that the procedures themselves in Illinois, aside from the backlog, are deficient? The procedures?
From PTAB and the Administrative Procedures Act, I think it's the tremendous delay. The fact that we can't resolve these cases before the next.
It's just the backlog.
Now, the Board of Review, and this isn't inherent in the briefs, and this is actually in subsequent appeals, we have started to bring this issue up. I think the procedural rules for the Board of Review may have some due process issues, because the same people that decided this 2005, at least one of them, continues to decide these assessments and drive these numbers. And there's no mechanism for him to recuse himself, even though he's been sued by us in federal court. And so I think there may be some procedural issues with the Board of Review procedures. If you just look at the statutory procedures for the PTAB and administrative review procedures, now we're not challenging that there's any due process issues, other than it takes a decade it's going to most likely take a decade for this to get completely resolved.
And let me just make sure I understood. The 4 appeals, the status of those are they're just sitting there.
3, they're just sitting there. None of them have been set for hearing. And one I don't believe has been docketed because we just filed it a matter of weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
I think another important issue to focus on is the triggering event for this increase in his assessment. When Dr. Heide filed his complaint with the Board of Review in Tazewell County. He was complaining about an assessment of $153,776. He was complaining about the township assessor's assessment. That was his complaint. What he came out of that with was almost three times what he went into those procedures with. And I think there's some serious retaliation issues there. And that's one of our claims, that this increase in assessment was done in a retaliatory manner because of Dr. Heide's repeated property tax assessment complaints.
What does the property measure?
Last property tax appeal board decision, it's down to, I believe, a little over 300,000 the assessment is.
No.
Square footage.
Footage was stipulated to before the property tax appeal board hearing. 4,000 square feet it was stipulated to, which is actually less than the information that was submitted in these appeals by Dr. Heide's appraiser.
You know, you're getting into your rebuttal time. I mean, you can if you want, but...
I do want to mention that the Supreme Court decided Levin v. Commerce Energy on June 1st, 2010, just a couple of days after we filed our reply brief. And I can answer those questions during my rebuttal time if anyone has any questions. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Jeanetten, you're taking 10 minutes, and then Mr. Green is taking 5.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yay.
Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Peter Jeanetten, and I represent the defendants other than Mr. Bremer, including the Board of Review. The first issue that I was going to address is the plaintiff's reliance on a fair number of documents that are outside the record. They included a number of the records from the Board of Review decision and the subsequent lawsuit that were not part of the record below.
Why can't we take judicial notice of the Property Tax Appeal Board's decision in his appeal from the 2005 tax assessment?
Because they've submitted those records to address the issue of whether the remedy in the Illinois courts is fair, speedy, and efficient. And we never had the opportunity to respond to that, to provide counter evidence before the district court, and the district court never had the opportunity to consider that. In the case that they've cited, where the Third Circuit took judicial notice of a document, it was an issue where a shareholder had filed a derivative suit, then the FDIC filed a similar suit covering the same issues. And so the concern was that they would have these two parallel proceedings. And rather than actually making use of that evidence at the appellate court level, what they did was acknowledge that other filing and remanded it back to the district court.
Why do you want the board's decision kept out of the record? What are you hiding from us?
Nothing at all.
I don't get it.
I just, you know, was bothered by the fact that we did not have an opportunity to provide counter evidence about the cause of the backlog, about the way the process worked, that kind of thing. It's only got the plaintiff's version or what they decided to include.
So let's go to the meat of all of this. Here, this fellow has a property assessed value between $145,000 and $156,000. He complains. He walks out of the complaint with $436,276 in assessment. How do you justify such a dramatic increase? It's amazing he didn't have a heart attack.
He's more stubborn than that. He wouldn't have a heart attack.
You're trying to give him one.
He had filed appeals in several prior years that had been granted, and his taxes had been reduced. And he came in this year, and the facts are not on the record, and frankly, it's unclear to me, but it came to the attention of the Board of Review that the property record card on record with the assessor's office indicated that this was a 10,000-square-foot house, And he was claiming that it was 3,800 or 4,000, something like that.
And guess who was right?
Yeah, he was. And as you pointed out, if we had been able to go out and look at it, we would have confirmed that and had a more accurate assessment. But at the time they assessed his property at 400,000 or whatever, they had, you know, plaintiff's appraiser saying it's 4,000 feet and their record card saying it's 10,000 square feet, and they have to, you know, pick one to go with. And, you know, in the absence of having the opportunity to look at it themselves, they went with the 10,000 figure. And, you know, if you've looked at the other evidence in the record, you've noticed that this is a pretty nice house. You know, it's on 60 acres, you know, with a gated driveway and a very well-built, very nice home. And frankly, if he was willing to sell it at what he claims it's worth, I would happily buy it from him. But he's been unwilling so far.
You might get it one way or another at the rate things are going. How much time elapsed before someone was able to inspect the property?
It was years, because as you noticed, we didn't get the opportunity to inspect it until after this case was concluded at the district court level and shortly before the hearing before the PTAB. And they did get it inspected before that, and PTAB did consider that inspection. PTAB could have barred him from introducing evidence of the lower square footage, but opted not to do that and reassessed his property somewhere between where he thought it was and where the Board of Review would have put it.
What do you think is the outer limit for a state remedy to satisfy the plain, speedy, and efficient standard?
That is an excellent question. And it's going to, I think, be a totality of circumstances kind of examination.
But 7 years, 8 years?
I think in one of the cases, and I can't for life me remember which one now, and I didn't note it, I think it took 17 years, and the court still said that that was sufficient. Perhaps because it was only money rather than an incarceration or something.
Well, we've been in the federal court 3 years on this case, and we're not close to a resolution.
Correct.
So.
But, I mean, their argument was that these have been taking up to 7 years, and their first appeal, and they submitted the ruling from the Board of Review, did not take quite that long. And as you see from the Board of Review records, if you consider those, they have been endeavoring to reduce that backlog and have been succeeding in reducing it somewhat. If I could move on to the Comity argument for just a moment, the plaintiff mentioned the Levin case, and one of the things that I wanted to point out that the court mentioned in that case is that the state may voluntarily submit to jurisdiction, that it's not the plaintiff or the taxpayer's objection to make. It would be our objection to make, and in the initial pleadings, we did not object to the federal court's jurisdiction. The district judge went ahead and ruled on the immunity issue, finding that the Board of Review members were absolutely immune. And I think that the court has discretion under that doctrine of comity to exercise jurisdiction, and believe that they properly did so and properly found that the Board of Review members were immune. The court have any other questions that you'd like me to address? All right.
Thank
I want to thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Mr. Green.
May it please the court, counsel, I'm here on behalf of Richard Brimmer. He's been incorrectly named as the Tazewell County Assessor. He's actually the Deer Creek Township Assessor. And for those that are not familiar with their Tazewell County geography, that's halfway between Congerville and Dillavin.
That
oh, yeah,
helps.
That straightens it.
Thank you very much.
Now we know. My client is quickly learning that he has a very thankless job. I agree with Mr. Jeanette.
Is he paid?
It's, I think, $4,000 a year. It's a retirement job. And obviously he walked into a hornet's nest, because the retaliation that the plaintiff complains about really occurred prior to Mr. Brimmer becoming the township assessor in January of 06.
Who has the authority to change the square footage on the property record cards?
I don't know that there's a statute that covers that. I think these things are handled rather informally. As you can imagine, a card is a very small document, and it probably varies from township to township and from county to county. And in this case, even before Mr. Brimmer became the assessor, the Board of Review had tentatively set the assessment at three times what it had been. So naturally, he's curious, why did this happen? Anybody with any common sense would wonder why. And he wanted to go out and inspect the property and was never given that opportunity at that point. And this whole thing could have been resolved at that point. And now my client's been in this suit for 2.5 years, and the property is such that it can't be viewed from a public road. There's a lock gate. So my client's hands were tied. He doesn't hold any sway over the Board of Review. The Board of Review decided to triple the assessment. All that Mr. Brimmer did was maintain the status quo. So I don't see how, in any way, shape, or form, my client violated the plaintiff's constitutional rights. But I suppose the first issue may be whether we should even be in federal court in the first place. Before I got involved, I think the magistrate determined that, it wasn't premature and that the federal court would take jurisdiction. And then, as it was almost a throwaway argument in my motion for summary judgment, this is premature. I cited McNary, and it's clear there's a long history of federal courts not wanting to be involved in tax collection systems. It makes total sense. I think Justice Rehnquist hit the nail on the head. But there's an adequate remedy. It may take longer than some of us would like. That's my client has no control over that. But I think the district court needs to be affirmed. If the court for some reason thinks that the case should stay in federal court, the record is undisputed that my client didn't violate anybody's constitutional rights, so he should be out either way. And unless the court has any additional questions, that's all that I have. Thank you, Your Honors.
Hey, how many minutes left? 4 minutes. Okay.
The first issue I want to address out of the gate is jurisdiction. Either there's federal court jurisdiction or there's not. And so if the court doesn't have jurisdiction, then the absolute immunity rulings that were made by the district court should not stand.
If it does have jurisdiction, the question of whether it should exercise it or not. That's the issue here.
I think there's two issues.
If there are federal claims that were made in the case, and the court has jurisdiction to adjudicate those, but whether the court elects to do that or not is what we're concerned with here.
The district court dismissed the case on Comity grounds. And this is where I think Levin is very instructive, especially.
Well, isn't this an aspect of the abstention doctrine we're talking about here?
Comity, assumption, yes. There's two principles in tax cases that are used. Comity seems to be the one, Comity. McNary, Hibbs, and Levin.
So that's just another way of approaching the idea of abstention.
Right. One of the issues that was raised in the Levin case was whether it should have been dismissed based on the Tax Injunction Act, which is a jurisdictional case. And Justice Thomas, which Justice Scalia joined him in a concurring opinion, said this isn't a jurisdictional issue. This should be based on jurisdictional. But even in the Comity context, if you're not going to touch these issues, why are we making a ruling on the absolute immunity? You know, if why are the defendants given a federal court venue but we aren't? And I think I wanted to bring that out first.
Well, what counsel said that when the absolute immunity issue was raised, there wasn't a position, a defense, or you didn't defend against that by saying the federal court should abstain. So that's why they went ahead.
Our position all along was there's federal court jurisdiction because
right.
we don't
so
believe.
So you didn't object to the, and then you get a ruling that goes against your interests, and now you say, well, the court shouldn't have heard this.
No, we're saying alternatively. We don't believe that the absolute immunity ruling, I think we believe that was erroneous as well. But alternatively, you know, if we don't have jurisdiction, he didn't have jurisdiction to decide those issues either. And also about the opinion that was submitted, or the Property Tax Appeal Board ruling that was submitted. That was submitted under Circuit Rule 30B3. We felt that even though it was after all the pleadings were made, it was an administrative decision. I didn't feel comfortable leaving that out of the record, just to clarify that point.
This is your Jarndyce versus Jarndyce, isn't it?
Sorry.
This is going to be your lifetime case.
I hope not, Your Honor. No, I mean, I hope I have better things in my future. It's a very interesting case. The facts are pretty extreme. They're pretty extreme facts. I hope I never have to stand in front of a Board of Review and have my tax assessment tripled, because I think I will have a heart attack. So, in summary, we believe that this case at least needs to be remanded so that district court can examine the adequacy of the state court remedies. That's number one, because that was never really touched on by the district court. And I think the facts will reveal that in the state of Illinois, these remedies are only getting worse, especially with the budget difficulties. And number two, we don't believe that the district court should have granted the Board of Review defendants absolute immunity. And also, if there's no jurisdiction, then the district court didn't have any jurisdiction to make that ruling. Thank you very much.
Thank you, one and all. And the case will be taken under advisement. Thank you.